All right, ready to go live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What is going on, people? What's happening? Thank you for coming and welcome to the Most High Show. My name is David. I am your host and I'm an addict. And that's why I'm here today. You know, on the Most High Show, if you don't know, the Most High Show is a platform where we tackle the stigmas of addiction, we tackle the stigmas of God and our higher power, we share stories from real people that do real things in life, we talk to them through their journey of addiction into recovery. I mean, it's full of like good stuff. We have a great guest today all the way from Colorado. She's gonna be in what we like to call the virtual decadent seat of service. So we're going to be talking with Andrea through in a digital way. And before we speak with her, though, we're all going to have a virtual roundtable discussion on what we like to call the mystic moment. And all that stuff comes to you from us right after this.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
All right, we're back. We are back.
Yes, we are back.
Me and David are back to side. Again.
Yeah, I like this angle. Look at me back here, guys. You see me?
Yeah. So, the mystic moment.
Yes, the mystic moment from my brother.
Yeah, that's me.
Yes.
So the mystic moment is Tuesday. I climbed a mountain with 22 other guys in recovery. And I got to turn your thing down, Leslie. It's mad distracting. All right, so I climbed a mountain, Mount Sherman, 14. It's a 14er is what they call it. That's what we us hikers call it in hiking terms.
Oh, now you got the lingo.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Climb one mountain, now you got the lingo.
And it was day one of year 11 for me.
Hey, let them know what that means, man. The audience might not get what you're saying.
That means for 11 years in a row, I haven't had any fun. So that's basically what it means.
No.
Yeah, and it was just an interesting way to I got emotional in the middle of the hike because I said to myself, what a way to start year 11. Right? Like, I think I'm starting year 11, right?
Yeah.
Right. So what a way
this
to start
your 11th year of sobriety and recovery.
Yeah. Right, because it was 2011.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
No. Yes. I'm starting year 12.
No, I'm in year 12.
No, but I'm starting year 12, because then when I get to the end, then I will have 12 years. Right?
Oh, dude, I'm messed up. Yes, you're absolutely, yes, you are right. Yeah, you did 11 years, and now you're journeying into your 12th year of sobriety.
Right.
Yeah, dude, that math messed me up.
Okay, let's ask let's ask the two ladies in the house who do not have substance abuse brain damage.
Oh, you could be helpful.
What do you think? Do you think, am I starting year 12, or is that what's happening?
Yes, I think you're on your way to year 12. You're in it.
Okay.
Whew, thank you for clearing that up. Oh,
thank
yeah.
you very much.
I appreciate it.
So I just thought that, and I had the math wrong, but it didn't matter on the mountain. The sentiment was there,
yes.
And it was powerful because it was just a very unique way to start. And I guess like the longer that I've stayed sober, the less I know. Right. The less it really matters. Right. And it's more about the day. Like you know, I'm really caught up in today. What am I doing today? And what am I doing in the present moment? Mm-hmm. And a lot of, there's been a lot of work that I've had to do to get to that mindset and that approach to life, to where, and I think like in my first few years of recovery, it was all about like, you know, especially like that first year, getting year one was so huge, right? Because it,
yeah.
And I was holding on to that. And I think the longer that I've been doing this, the less important the time is, because I realize that I just have today, right? And I also realize that it's not guaranteed, right?
Yeah.
And if I just keep continuing to treat my humanity, right, every day, then I've learned to live under a new way of life, a principled way of life, to do things that I don't necessarily want to do, to help people even when I don't feel like I want to help people, right?
Yeah.
To take the calls when I'm just chilling watching a movie and I don't feel like talking to anybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just a pretty profound experience to be on that mountain, because I knew that I was going to make it to the top. I knew it.
Yeah, that was no...
It was no question.
Yeah, it was no question.
It was just how long it was going to take me.
Yeah.
And as I was walking, it took me back to all the traumatic things that have transpired in my life, either of my own making. And I thought, dude, this mountain's got nothing on the stuff that I've been through. Like, the pains and without getting to, you know, like sharing all those details, but it's got nothing on that, right? This is so easy. I just have to put one foot in front of the other and keep breathing and keep stepping and stop when I'm a little tired. And that's what I did. And compared to the other things that I've been through in my life, it was nothing, right?
Wow.
So, you know, I'm sure, David, you got something to reflect back on that, and I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, man. Man, that's a, first of all, that's an epic journey to take. And I think your attitude towards it is really like profound, because, you know, even, the guarantee, you knowing that you're going to make it to the top, right? That's pretty awesome. Okay. That's like, you know, that's growth right there. It's like, I'm getting to the top of it. I don't know how long it's going to take or whatever, but I'm getting to the top. And even though, you know, even though getting to the top was nothing compared to what you've been through in your life that put you on at the bottom of that mountain, journeying up the mountain, I think that moment, okay, it was meaningful, because there's no doubt that it's 14,000 feet. There's no doubt the elevation is real serious. There's a reason why you guys flew from Atlanta to Colorado to tackle that obstacle, right? But for it to impact you in a way where you could reflect on all the things that you've been through that got you your 2 feet moving up that mountain is epic, because you were exactly where you needed to be on your, you know, celebrating your journey into the 12th year of your sobriety. So kudos to you, dude. In that experience, that had to be an amazingly spiritual moment, especially to be able to share it with other dudes, you know, all going through their own journeys, man. That's epic, man. I love that.
Yeah. It was also the metaphor of climbing a mountain. It got way overused the whole trip. It was like, if y'all use a metaphor for the mountain in your recovery one more time,
oh yeah,
I am going to go get a drink.
I bet you that got old really fast.
Yeah. But I didn't. I think I just want to say this too. Like, I think that over the years, and like as I've been working with people in recovering and trying to be helpful, you know, right now what's really been kind of stirring and working in me is just the way that we tackle and treat like addiction,
mm-hmm.
right? And the way we approach it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's no secret, like my method and your method, David, has been the 12 steps, right? Mm-hmm. And really, like, the 12 steps isn't so much about drinking or using or stopping it. It's really about living life, like what you say, David, life on life's terms. It's about becoming a human. And I think like the more that I'm doing this, it's the more that I'm thinking, man, like, you know, some of it is, it's just kind of like, you know, the power of just sitting with somebody and being with them and being present and holding like a sacred space in your being to receive whatever they're going through, no matter what it is. There's probably some good tools and techniques and trainings and things that can help you to do that. But I think like the reality is we're all kind of like humans just making this up, figuring it out. And I think that, you know, I have been clean for this long, but that's not really about it. It's like, really, is have I been a better husband? Have I been a better friend? Have I been a better dad? Have I been a better, business owner or nonprofit runner? Like, those are the things that are really like, and if I was to tell you in these last 11 years, did I do all that right? No, I jacked a lot of that up. Right? I think the day for last Saturday, I got it right with Leslie, right? So, you know, it takes time to get this, to learn to be human. And I think all of us who are willing to go through that inner journey to become an actual human, it's worth it. And the more of us that do that, the better I think we all are as a collective.
I couldn't agree with you more, man. You know, I think about the, you know, the steps, right? And the program that we work. It's really, I mean, you would think, you know, if you were a newcomer coming in and you wanted to stop drinking or you had this desire to like live in recovery, you would think like in within the steps, if you know nothing about it, would say, this will help you quit drinking. If you want to quit drinking, then you do this and then don't do this. But it's nothing about that. It's all about how to live like a life within a structure where you are asking hard questions or difficult questions or things that you may have never asked yourself before. Like, what is really wrong with me? Let me point these things out. And then after I point them out, let me work on them. You know what I mean? With some accountability of a fellowship of people that are all working those same things. They're trying to better yourself. You know what I mean? Let me give this to a power greater than myself. Let me take, you know, me out of it and understand that like my will has been screwing things up for so long that I got to give this up to something bigger and better and stronger and all powerful and like put me in the backseat and like do the will of him who I surrender to, you know, my higher power. You know what I mean? Let me make amends to things, you know, that to people or things that I might have wronged, and let me be accountable and courageous enough to actually say those things out loud to somebody. And you know what? In all of that, let me help people. Let me make it a priority and an obligation in my life to live in a way where I'm helping somebody else other than myself.
Yeah.
Those are all things that have nothing to do with sobriety. It has everything to do with living a life of recovery, meaning a better life, a meaningful life, a purposeful life, things like that, man, that help you become a better person, you know, because it is about being a better dad. It is about being a better husband. It is being about a better person. And that's what I believe that whole setup at the meetings are all about. Very little to do with like not putting a needle in your arm or not taking the next drink.
Yeah.
Because you just got to stop that stuff.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You dig?
You dig? you think cocaine's fun? Try following God.
Oh, yeah.
Try following God.
Yeah. That's a stimulant on a whole different level.
All right. So
that's good stuff, man.
I'm going to take us to a little break, and then we'll be back with the decadent seat of virtual service.
Yes, sir.
Or the virtual seat of actual service.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Yeah.
All right.
I dig it.
Coming back soon.
Hey.
Why Most High Media? Because I don't have the answers. other people do, and learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who have been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives and tapped into a way of being and a way of living, but it's actually real and obtainable. That's why.
Montana Society, an inspiring docuseries about a group of addicts who endeavor to repurpose an underground nuclear bunker in Paradise Valley, Montana. Along the way, they learn to work together under the wild leadership of Dean, a financial guru and outdoorsman who has his money on the line. In the end, will they learn to repurpose their pain and the bunker into something new and wonderful? Find out on this season of the Montana Society.
Hey, folks. All right. That was the break. And this is the now. And this is the moment of the show where we get to introduce Andrea. How are you doing, Andrea?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, guys, you know, we've had like the blessing to have people on the show that are really in the midst of tackling a serious problem, a pandemic sorts, right? So we've had some people on lately that has been, and the focus has been all about fentanyl, you know what I mean? And, you know, this is such a serious topic, and it's a topic that this platform should be sharing as much as possible, because present day, man, I mean, it's horrific how it's attacking the country and people are dying quickly. They don't know it. They don't know what's going on. So we want to like give as much information and inspiration and understanding to what this substance is doing to the people who suffer from the disease of addiction, or not suffer from the disease of addiction. Just people are just, you know, out of nowhere, just dying from this thing. So we have Andrea in the seat again. Andrea, so would you mind us giving us a little bit of information of your platform and what you're doing right now?
So I bring awareness to the dangers of illicit fentanyl. Mm-hmm. So I have a few foundations. I have Voices for Awareness Foundation, a Colorado Coalition for Families Affected by Fentanyl, and also Facing Fentanyl. And Facing Fentanyl is a collaboration of many other organizations like mine, where we work together to bring these dangers to the public.
Oh, wow. So you have a big collaborative force all doing their own thing, and you guys are all working together to tackle this.
Definitely. So last cool. Sunday on the 21st, we all came together and had our first national day, and it was phenomenal.
Wow. So what all goes in on there? Is just conversation, or is it tactical, or is it, you know?
There was a lot of social media attached to that. We had a lot of supporters that came in that are either in recovery or prevention, and they shared our message on that day and for the entire week. Actually, we have an exhibit called Faces of Fentanyl, that is in the DEA museum. And so they brought our kids in, and it's a permanent exhibit there. And we work with the CDC, and our families had events all over the United States last weekend.
Oh, that's amazing.
So we had 28 organizations that worked through us for these events, concerts and fentanyl summits and unity walks and vigils and all types of things. But what was phenomenal about it is that the public found out about this day with the help of CDC and DEA recognizing our day. And so this happened all across the United States, not just those 28 events, or not just the people that we reached out to.
It's a national level situation.
It makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck to think what these families did. You know, we were doing the work of the federal government, bringing prevention out there with resources. We're moms and dads, and We used all of our man hours and resources and just out of the box thinking. And, you know, so many people were reached last weekend. It's phenomenal to me.
That congratulations on that. I think that is truly, truly amazing. Just to be recognized on that level, just like you said, I mean, is phenomenal because it's, you know, for so long, I feel like, you know, there's always something in front of addiction. There's always something in front of there. There's always something huge. And I feel like, you know, I could be mistaken. I don't know. I feel like, you know, the people that suffer and are dying from the disease of addiction and, you know, with this added like fentanyl thing, you know, it just gets pushed to the backseat a lot. And for it to be recognized, for the people to organize in a way to, for, you know, it to be recognized by the DEA, for it to be recognized, this issue recognized by the CDC is monumentous. I mean, that's huge.
That's how it felt to us. Yeah. And, you know, we speak for those that are addicted, unsuspecting, and or someone experimenting. To us, it's all the same because we look at fentanyl as poisoning. When someone passes, not an overdose. And it's because of the nature of the drug, why it's here, how it's getting here, and its intention. So, you know, we're parents that have had all situations. Some of us just had a child that experimented for the first time. Others of us lived with a kid that suffered from substance abuse. And so, you know, we're out there for everybody. And we just want to warn others because, you know, we've lost our kids already. There's no bringing them back. But the devastation, the fallout from that, we want to spare other people from. And we feel it's really important to get the message out. So we're not out there to have everybody. We're not interested in people feeling sorry for us or to martyr or any of those things. Sure. We're telling you our story because we want you to know what we didn't know. And we're making headway. We moved the needle a little bit last Sunday.
No, I think I really, I really think you did. I mean, and on a great scale, you know. So right now, so you know, you have this big summit, okay? Now, currently, so you know, beyond that, right now, what is, you know, the actions of every day, like, you know, beyond that now, what is the everyday thing? How in other ways are you getting the message and information out to people?
So facing fentanyl, working with all of those other families was new to me. I just started that this year, founded it this year with the other families. I've had Voices for Awareness Foundation for 4 years. I started that when I lost my daughter, Ashley, primarily because I'd never heard of fentanyl. The day that I lost Ashley is the day that I found out about fentanyl. And, you know, the day of her service, my girlfriends pulled me in the bathroom and they had a cell phone and they said, we need to show you something. And it was so, I still couldn't believe even at that point, how did my daughter die from a pill? Like, that doesn't make sense. People take pills. They don't die from a pill. And, you know, my husband, he used to be with fire service. And he explained to me, she was poisoned. She took something that she didn't know she was taking, right? That you're poisoned. If I hand you a glass of wine and you drink it and I put something in it, you weren't expecting that you've been poisoned. And so the day of my daughter's service, they show me this little PSA from my PD, from police department, and it's got these two blue pills on it. And they look exactly the same, and one's real and one's not. I've never heard of this. And so I knew for them to put that out there that my daughter wasn't the only one. Like, there had to be more. And what was going on? Why didn't I know about this? Why didn't anybody else I knew know about this? So we started asking for answers and reaching out to the press. And really, it was a lifesaver for me because I needed to know what happened to my daughter. But what happened is I found out about thousands and thousands and thousands of other people that died just like my daughter had. And then I found out that the person that took my daughter's life had, you know, where these drugs came from, it was responsible for killing other people, several other people. And so I started opening my mind to this world I hadn't even thought of before because I had never been affected like that. And from that grew the opportunities to learn about counterfeit drugs. And there are so many. these fake pills, not just fentanyl. There are a lot of counterfeit drugs. And I worked with some larger organizations, which I sit on their advisory boards now, but they took me in as an affected family, giving me the opportunity to work with legislation and with law enforcement. And it just all piqued my interest. And I will tell you that I'm engaged in every area of fentanyl, from the top to the bottom, whether it's prevention and awareness or law enforcement, what the tools that law enforcement need, you know, to interdict. And with this National Day, I'll tell you, we opened a floodgate. And, you know, I thought I was going to get a rest on Monday after 4 or 5 months of planning this for the first year, but or three times as busy in this week. And so we continue to look for ways to reach the head of the snake, really, to stop the flow of fentanyl into our United States.
Right.
That's the most important thing to me, but always spreading prevention, whether it's town hall or getting into the schools, whatever we can do to get the message out there.
Yeah, I have a question with, you know, because one thing about in talking about like how it gets in here, right? And there's like a, you've covered a bunch of different things, and I just want to get on talk about one of it, because like, and David and I have had talked about this, like, you know, it's not common, it's not uncommon for drug sellers, right, dope dealers, to cut their product, right? It's a way for them to
make it bigger, make it more sellable, you know, make it make more money off of it,
right? Make it more profitable, right? They're adding more filler profitable. In it, and so, you know, a lot of times they're using filler that you can get at your local grocery store or that you can get at the vitamin shop, right? Which makes sense, right? That's in your local community. And so the question is, like, is fentanyl really that easy for them to get that they're cutting drugs with fentanyl and it's easier than baby laxative or B12 or whatever filler they were using it before?
Yes. So, so this drug is purposely made to be deceptive. Mm-hmm. To be the most addictive drug that's out there.
Yeah.
You know, this is a drug that leaves little room for recovery. And you know, I'm sure that in the work that you do and your own experiences, you know people that have used many different kinds of drugs or what you used your own self and it didn't kill you. And now fentanyl, you can't recover from a morgue. You can't recover from your grave, right?
Right.
And people that I work with that have been using and are desperately trying to stop tell me that they would rather take the chance of using, even though they know it, that could be the last pill they snort or ingest or whatever they're smoking that has fentanyl in it. They'll take that chance because the withdrawal is so bad, even knowing that it may kill them. And so, you know, the withdrawal is worse than their imagination of imagery of death, right? And so it is so very powerful. And the cartels are creative. They know what they're doing. They know how to make their money. And, you know, this week we get a statement from DEA saying that these rainbow pills are out there. Well, it's a direct attack on our kids, right? If you've got a 13-year-old thinking about experimenting and he's hanging out somewhere with his friends and he sees this bag of pills, that doesn't even look scary. It looks like Lucky Charms, you know, or Skittles or something. It doesn't look scary.
Right. Yeah.
And we're trying to get the message out to these kids that don't really, you know, just say no, don't take it. That doesn't really work. They really need to understand how deadly these pills are, how lethal they are. To make a difference to them, because it's a part of human nature to want to experiment or trust someone. You know, my daughter was 32 years old and the person that gave her this pill loved her. He did not know there was fentanyl in it and he wasn't trying to kill my daughter. It's taken many years for me to get my head wrapped around that because he did take my daughter, but he didn't, that's not where he was going with that. He didn't know. And, and in fact, he took his own life the following day. So I know how he was affected. Then we have two families without their children in just moments because of a little piece of a pill.
I mean, you know, it's really hard to wrap your head around that. I mean, everything, you know, everything that you're saying, I'm like picturing in my head what it would be like to get flooded with all this information from something that you're totally ignorant from in the midst of like the most tragic day that you could probably imagine. You know,
I thought it was a lie.
Yeah.
When I got that call, I thought this can't even be like, who's saying this about my daughter? I'm going to go find her right now. And we're going to find whoever's done this and kick their ass, because why is anybody even making this up?
Right.
And it was true.
Sounds like such a lie, so fabricated. Like,
yeah.
Oh man. You know, and again, you know, this is what we kind of talked about the last time this subject came up too. It is like such a trick. You know, it's such a trick to, you know, see these things. And number one, you don't know. You know, and just to put that up against a kid's natural wonder. A natural, like the natural journey of being able to experiment with things, not knowing what's cool, what's not cool, not really knowing what's dangerous, not even like knowing, you know, the consequences of life and death, man. They're just living life and trying to do something that might be secretive or might be cool or might be a little dangerous or whatever. And it's automatically it's over. It's such a hard thing to like wrap your head around, you know.
It's a totally different drug world out there.
Yeah.
And there just is no experimenting. And it's frightening to know that our kids are in the most dangerous time that we've ever had for them to be teenagers. And, you know, we talk about teenagers. We talk about this age group, 18 to 45. Teen death is, you know, fentanyl is responsible for 77% of the teen deaths we've seen. If those numbers
I did not know that stat. Wow.
It's increasing all the time. But, you know, even here in Colorado, we've lost toddlers that have gotten into their parents' stash or found a bag of pills and eaten one. And then you've lost a baby. And we have a senior population, too, that, you know, things have changed with prescriptions. Yeah. And many of them don't like hearing what we have to say because they think we're talking about prescription drugs. We're not. Yeah. We're not talking about prescription fentanyl, which can be very confusing when you see those pictures in the media. They're showing those prescription fentanyl. We're not talking about that. But a lot of these seniors reach out for medication. They can't afford to buy theirs, and they reach out to the street, and we're losing them too.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know of that personally, and I know of older people and the need of prescription drugs, and it's just easier or more available to get on the street. Yeah. Something that would make you, you know, the equivalent to that, and not even knowing that something like fentanyl could be in there. It's just, I mean, it's just, it's all around tragedy, man. You know what I mean? It's just, that's hard to grip, man.
Well, and this drug, fentanyl, is not new, right? So it's like been around since the 60s, right?
Yeah.
And it's been used for extreme pain. Yeah. Like, I think my dad got in a motorcycle accident years and years and years ago. And he shattered his leg. It was very bad, right? And he had the pins in it. And I remember they sent him home from the hospital. He lived with us for a while. And he had fentanyl patches, right? Because it was developed for that extreme amount of pain. Because opioids bond so well with the opioid receptor in the body, right? It's why it's such a good pain or anesthetic.
You it makes you feel good.
You know,
when you're hurting,
right? Right. So you know, it was developed. You know, so it is really what's, you know, I hate to say it's interesting to me, but it's just suspicious. Like, how does it pop up now, and why is it so prevalent now, and why do drug dealers have such access to this, and how is it making its way into these pills? And it's and what you said, I love the term poisoning people.
Like, yes, that's it.
And since you've been working with the DEA, what is the DEA's response to this influx of fentanyl getting into America and getting into these pills secretly and deceptively.
So the DEA is calling it like it is, that these precursors are coming from China and going into Mexico and a couple of other countries. Mm-hmm. And the cartels are bringing this in. It's cheap. It's cost them, you know, a penny to make. Four mm-hmm. years ago, these pills were selling, you know, for $50 a piece. Now you can find them $5, $7, $3, depending on what you buy. Or you can go to a state like Montana where they're getting, you know, $100 a pop for one of these pills. Mm-hmm. And Montana is a heavily inundated area. You know, there it's flooding into there. They have a really big crisis on their hands.
I didn't know that.
Hands. Yeah. And so there's no smell. There's no taste to this. And, you know, a year ago, we were saying that they were interdicting about 15% mm-hmm. of the fentanyl that was coming through the United States. Now we're looking at about 5%.
Wow.
You know, when we see seizures that there were, you know, kilos and kilos, enough to kill 49 million people in one seizure, imagine what's getting in.
Wow.
And right. where is Man. All that anyway? Like, right. that's indicative of stockpiling. So where is that exactly? I want to know. But we need federal help here, because we've got a public health crisis. We've got a national security crisis. You know, we're watching people vanish every day. And without a thought, you know, these deaths aren't investigated in many cases. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate because the DEA had my daughter's case and they worked very hard for her. But in the end, weren't able to prosecute based on her death. They did on someone else's. And so mm-hmm. We're not talking about a street dealer, somebody that was trading for his own drugs, somebody addicted. We're talking about somebody that wasn't using and was selling, knowing that he was taking other people's lives. And the idea to me that there is no accountability for human life, like, what are we turning into? Like, why aren't we screaming from the rooftops everywhere about this?
Yeah.
Why are families begging for someone at a federal level to pay attention to this?
Well, and I think that's why it's so important to... and this was Mike told me about kind of the shift, Mike F, who was on our show a couple of weeks ago, who connected us about the shift in the language, right? Because when you see the way we talk about fentanyl and fentanyl death is we associate it to overdose, right? Yeah. And it is technically an overdose, right? But medically, but what that puts in people's minds is street drug addict, homeless, scum of the society.
Yeah, it's the stigmas. Yeah. It's the stigmas of
yes.
it all. Yeah.
Yes.
And so the shift in the language to fentanyl poisoning is, I think, a brilliant idea to really start re-imaging people when they think about these deaths and they see these stats and these numbers and 120 people or, you know, 200 people die today, that they understand that we're not talking about, you know, IV users in North Philly. We're talking about children. We're talking about college kids. We're talking about high schoolers experimenting, and to get the imagery out of their head that it's this, that the only the low drug addicts are getting affected by this.
Yeah, this is not just a junkie thing, man. It's not just a dope fiend thing.
Right.
Okay.
It's Mike is great at, he was at my event here in Denver, and I love listening to him. And he said something that we say all the time, you know, if you take too much of something, that's an overdose. But he put a twist to it. And he said, you know, 2 milligrams of something isn't too much. It is with fentanyl. That's got the ability to take your life.
I like that.
And he was pretty powerful. And, you know, in listening to him, I realized he's talking to me about recovery. And I'm thinking to myself, everyone should know this in recovery or not, because this is like life. Like, this is the how you should be. When you were talking a moment ago about being human, what he's saying about recovery, it applied so much to my life within this fentanyl communities that I work in. And and just life.
Yeah.
And so it was a great friendship that we were building, and I value what he has to say. And he came to listen to me, and I was like, no, I'm listening to you today. Such valuable information that he has. I love listening to him.
Shout out to Mike F. That's that boy over there in Cali, right? But he's going all over the place.
The New Yorker in Cali.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's a New Yorker in California.
But, you know, in working with him and him sharing our message with the recovery communities and the addicted communities, we had people coming in, you know, to Mike, like we have this letter out to the president right now asking him to address this. And there were addicts sending videos that were saying, please sign this letter because we're dying out here. We're dying out here. And to see us meld, you know, with this world, all these different worlds come together, it's fascinating to me. I'm so very grateful. And I hope we can continue doing that. Imagine, we're like the population if you put us all together.
Absolutely.
Imagine the power and the people that we would have if we were all together.
Well, you know, the collaboration is making forward progress. I mean, it is being recognized by, people and organizations that like make the move to make a national stand against things. I mean, they're hearing it and they're recognizing it because of the collaboration of, you know, parents who lost, you know, their children, you know, basically, like you said, being poisoned, and the community of recovery, you know, of people that suffer from the disease of addiction and how it's influxed and got into that whole thing, you know, and our people are dying using too, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know, the thing that's really, and I love that we're talking about this, is like, it's confusing to me why I even call it that, because call it fentanyl, because this is a drug being made on the streets. Like, to make that distinction between the illicit fentanyl and the prescribed fentanyl, where is the battle really generating from? The battle is generating from these, I think they call it clandestine labs in different countries,
clandestine
labs that are like illegally making these street styled opioid that's really strong, easy to make, not too much money, and it is straight poison being snuck in here, being put into everything. I mean, it is in everything that you can think of, anything that you could like that you could buy again, you know, anything that, you know, that needs a little push to move faster. It's fentanyl's put in there, but just because of the addictive quality and the euphoria that's behind it. You know what I mean? The intense euphoria. I mean, this needs to be heard. The information needs to be put out there, man. You know, as long as you want to take, I'm sorry, that I would like to, if you would, you know, share a little bit about your daughter, if you would mind doing that. I'd like to get to know, you know, I'd like to put a face and then behind that, you know.
So this girl, amazing, 32 years old. She was a mother of a 7-year-old when she died. And Ashley suffered with alcohol for quite some time. And not to say that she never used drugs. I'm sure she did socially, but it wasn't her thing. Booze was her thing. And because of that, she had pancreatitis, and that's what ended up, that pain, someone gave her a pill. But my daughter isn't about that. Okay. So who she was this loyal, loving, brilliant girl and beautiful, had no idea. She would get so offended when she was in high school because she had these friends, you know, male friends from years since she was in grade school. And then when they got older, you know, they would approach her. They'd be like, you know, I really like you this way more than a friend. And she'd be so offended by this. She never gathered any of that. She wanted to be a forensic scientist. So like CSI is what she thought that she would be. And her, you know, my husband's in fire, and she would go with him on calls, and straight A student. And she just could light a room up when she walked in and leave with everyone in the room being her friend. And I find out, you know, the day after Ashley's service, some people came to us and said, we're going to have this. On Sundays, we go down to the park and we feed the homeless. And we're doing this day in honor of Ashley. And I thought that was nice, but I didn't see the, you know, connection. And I went down there. And the reason that they did it is because my daughter had been going down there and feeding the homeless on Sunday. Wow. And I didn't know that. And she'd worked very hard with her substance use. And, you know, 10 days before she dies, she posts this beautiful picture of herself saying, today is a good day. Mm. You know, beautiful. And just, I saw it all over her face. She was having a good day and she was coming out of this. And then we lost her, but she was, you know, the first daughter, my first child, first granddaughter, you know, the queen of the family. That's who my daughter was. But I couldn't, if I talked to you for 100 hours, I would never be able to explain to you this girl. And now I know she opens a lot of doors for us to progress.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I need the people need to hear that these, you know, the people that are losing their lives are real and beautiful and important. Yeah. And to lose their life like this, I mean, it just has to be stopped.
My daughter never thought she was going to die. She didn't want to die. Yeah. And you will see your entire family drop to the ground. Mm. It's, please, please talk to your kids. We want you to know what we didn't know.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing I wanted to talk about. You know, now that you have this platform, this collaborative platform as well, of different, different ways to strategically, you know, put the message out there and share, you know, your part in this battle. You know, I just want to know, you know, like, you know, is there a method to, you know, what should we be telling parents? What should we be telling parents about, you know, whose kids are like 13, 14 going out there? Like, you know, what kind of information, you know, do you think would be valuable?
Well, they need to know, you know, families need to know the magnitude, the dangers of fentanyl, because I don't think they do. And like you said, they associate it only to drug users.
Yeah.
So, in many cases. So we want them to know that social media for teens right now is, you've got to be so careful, because our kids are being lured in through social media sites like Snapchat and TikTok and e-commerce. You know, these kids can be in your living room looking on their phone while you're eating dinner, and the cartel is virtually sitting there with them, right? They can have these drugs delivered right to their window or to your front door like a pizza. There's plugs. They call this plugs. You can get on your phone like you would order Uber, who's the closest car, right?
Yeah.
All the drugs are out there. And so parents need to know that, and these emojis, things like that. They can go to One Pill Can Kill for DEA, and they can find these emojis. That's really important. You see all these cute little faces, right? What's bad about that? Well, they're actually drug deals that are happening on these phones. And
it's like a code, you're saying. Like they're doing it in code, yeah.
Definitely. So that is one thing. So parents should be informed, and then see what your kids know. It's, you don't need to attack them. Right. Yeah. Let's sit down. What do you know? And maybe they don't know anything, and maybe they know a lot. And I'll tell you, our kids right now know more than we do.
I know, but man. They really do. They're very well informed.
You've got to show them these stories. And we work with a video called Dead on Arrival. And it's really parent stories. And we take this into the schools, and some good friends of mine have that foundation, and they made this video, and we use it. A lot of the organizations use it because it shows you, you know, kids of all ages that had no intentions of dying, had no clue this was going to happen. And, you know, it's different than when we were kids, you know, you have a breakup now, or things seem very heavy right now. And you got to just reach out to these kids, be open and honest, let them tell you what they know. And tell them how dangerous and how serious this is, and show them.
Do you know if there is, you know, if this kind of conversation is going on within like high schools or junior highs? Are people, are administration, like school faculties, taking the time to inform the kids on that level while they're in school about the dangers of fentanyl and things of that nature?
So many of our affected families go into the schools. They fight all the time to get into the schools. And so it's different in different areas.
Yeah.
And many of them are successful and they get in, and these affected families go to these kids and they tell them the stories. Concern I have living in Colorado is that we are teaching safe, how to use, makes me angry, how to use drugs safe without any prevention attached to that. And so we have this idea that if we give kids test strips, right, that they can use safely. Mm. Well,
That's something I never thought I'd hear.
Yeah.
To give the kids test strips to make sure.
So if you're a kid and you've never used, and you think, you know, and I go out, I'm in Larimer Square down in Denver talking to these beautiful all-American kids, right? And they're like, no, ma'am, I don't use it. If I did, I'd test. Well, do you know how to test? Every drug is different. They're not, this isn't 100% surefire way of saving your life. It's a tool, certainly, but don't trust in this. We've got to teach these kids prevention. And so, yeah, we try to do that. We speak everywhere that we can to reach these kids.
Yeah. One of the things that I've been talking with an organization out here, and I really like their approach to the prevention, because what they do is it's about preparation and education, right? Yeah. And their approach is great, because they're not sitting in these environments going, don't do it, because that doesn't work, right? If you want a kid to do something, tell them don't do it, right? Yeah. Or tell them like the most crazy thing is going to happen, right? Because they're going to think that they're the exception to the rule. So it's about education, and how do you educate kids on knowing, like you said, and you've said it a couple times, like, it's different from back in the day when I was in high school.
Yeah.
You know, back in the 90s, right? When, you know, Vanilla Ice still had a rap career, you know? Like, it was different back then. Like, you could we weren't worried about buying something that was going to be laced with an illicit, counterfeit fentanyl that was going to kill us.
Yeah.
Right? And
so easily, too. Like,
so just easily.
Just like that, you know.
Right.
And that wasn't part of the plan.
Educating kids on that, this is the chance that you're taking. And like I tell I have teenagers and a 21-year-old, and I talk to them all the time about, don't take a pill if it says it's Tylenol, like, make sure you're opening it out of a Tylenol. Yeah. And then I prefer you don't even take anything if your friends give you anything, you know, because I don't even like when like sometimes my wife will have an allergy pill bottle and there'll be ibuprofens in there. And I'm like, I don't even like to see the ibuprofen in the allergy bottle, because it's not the right, it's not the right thing in there. And I don't like to see that. And I think that the more that we can educate kids on the dangers of this, that hopefully they can make those educated, then they're educated and they can make some decisions on their own, because ultimately, you know, especially for teenagers, it's so hard. I wish someone would have told me this before I had kids, right? Because when they're in that teenage, the ideal thing is that they're going to start making decisions on their own. You want that for a child, right?
Right.
They need to start saying to themselves, is this the right thing to do? Is this the wrong thing to do?
This is good. This is bad. This is a good choice. This is a bad choice.
And if they make a mistake, okay, then we help them. We help them pick them back up, and then they can learn from their mistakes. The problem is with this, they don't get the opportunity
to learn. It's no help. It's no learning.
They can't learn because they're dead.
The opportunity of learning is gone.
Right.
Well, and you know, a couple years ago, in the first days of COVID, in 2 or 3 days, we all knew we knew we needed to wash our hands. We knew we needed to wear a mask. We knew we needed to use hand sanitizer and stay 6 feet apart. We got all of that because there was this constant messaging. we're not hearing anything from the powers that be.
Yes, and that needs to stop. That needs to start.
Yeah.
Like, that really needs to happen.
And
the numbers itself.
You show people, yeah. And somebody's, quite a few people actually said to me, do we really need a national day for this? This is another thing. And I've heard that a lot. Well, yeah, because we've lost more people in just last year than we have if you add a few wars up.
Wow.
So when you use that many people, lose that many people, you, yes, that is cause for concern. And so that is really what I think, aside from talking to our kids and all of these things, when you portray and tell the truth to the American people about how dangerous this is and everyone's talking about it and, you know, and stop the flood of it from coming into the United States, then we have a chance.
Yeah.
We've got to get there.
You know what the sad thing is? I mean, honestly, in my head, I'm going, it has to trend. This has to catch. I mean, it has to catch on Instagram.
Yeah. We need The Rock to talk about this. Yeah, on his Instagram.
Yeah, we need
live.
Jigga out there, and like, you know, and he kind of did in the last song, but no.
Yeah, you're right. It does. It has to trend, and it has to get out there on social media, because that's where young people are, right? I mean, that's the idea behind our platform here, and we're gonna clip this up and put it out there.
Believe we are, you know. And then, you know, the thing is too, you know, speaking about the replicas, you know, I really put myself, because I was, you know, I mean, in my active addiction, man, I was, you know, gnarly. It was really, really bad. And I remember I saw the difference between like the Perc 30s, the blue Percocets, and how they make them, like, you know, like how they use. It's exactly the same thing. So I am in the 90s, bro. I'm almost sure that if I was in my active addiction, especially at a certain time in my life, that I would be dead because of this. This right here, this epidemic or pandemic or whatever you call it, this happening and this taking such a hold and being so easily pushed right now would have definitely killed me. I know that. For a fact, you know what I mean? And just the thought of other people around the, around the time or going through the same thing as me, just ignorant, you know what I mean? Not knowing, just out to get high or have fun, that the dangers of that right now, I just, you know, it does have to trend for it to make it like a real impact on the youth.
Well, you know, the work we did in Philadelphia with Suleiman, when we were out there handing out Narcan kits, right?
Yeah.
What the people were telling us, and what Suleiman has said too, is that they're not even buying heroin out there in Kensington Beach. Mm-hmm. They're buying fentanyl.
Yeah.
They don't even.
You can't even find old drugs in some places at all.
Exactly. Yeah, they're not even trying to mess with that. They want to go right to the thing.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And I would too. I mean, as an addict, I would have been, I'd do that. I wouldn't say, oh no, give me just the regular dope. If there's something stronger and more powerful, even though it's light, like life risking, I'm definitely going for that. Because it's an opioid, you know?
Yeah, that you think, you know, why would you kill your customer? We get that question all the time. Mm-hmm. But the reality is when people that are using find out someone's died, they will look that for that dealer. They'll search them out because they know
the reality
they've got something stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa, this is a lot to unpack, you know? But all we can do is put the information out there, educate, be vigilant, be persistent. And that's what you guys are doing. And, you know, on a personal note, you know, like my only sister died of a fentanyl overdose. So to see this being done right now, you know, the movement that you guys are making, you know, I signed that petition as quickly as I saw it. You know what I mean? And like, you know, big shout out to all you guys and Mike for, you know, putting that in my view. You know, that came across to me through him. And just to, you know, like, everybody that is like taking this seriously and really trying to educate and to educate, you know, and the movement of like making Narcan more available, more able to get, more usable, because that is the lifesaver. That's the on contact lifesaver of this. That's what we have to defend somebody dying from, you know, a fentanyl overdose.
Right. And it, but it's still just a symptom reliever, right? It's still, it's not like solving the issue.
No.
Right. And, so aside from the petition, which I'm sure we'll put that out, that's still being signed, right?
Yes. Okay. We're going to issue it again because it's very important. Not because I'm so optimistic that the president's going to look at this and do something right away. I'm optimistic that every person that reads it will understand the magnitude of what's going on.
Yeah.
And so to me, that is one more person that we reached, letting them know how bad this is. Yeah. And we continue to work with legislatures and with every single person that we can to move for positive change. And soon a bunch of us are going to head down to Washington, and we meet there once a year with another group. And it's a time to just be right there on the doorstep of the White House, which we will continue to do. But
when does that happen?
That is September 17th. And you'll see us all out there with banners and signs and everything. You know, we're peaceful. We're not going there to cause trouble.
Oh, I better not go there. I better not go there. I'll tell you that much right now.
But we unite during this time, and it's to make a statement, right? To make another statement and say, hey, look at what's going on. And then, you know, we continue every day there with anything that we can possibly think of. And so a lot of us in our organizations work in our counties, in our states, with our AGs, with our governors, whatever we can do. We're always trying to reach out to people and get the message out.
Yeah.
And to the White House.
We'll get there. Y'all gonna get there. Y'all keep doing what you're doing. It's gonna reach where it's already going where it needs to go. And like the movement is big. And again, I so appreciate all your efforts and everything you guys are doing. Most High Media definitely supports that. And I'm sure, you know, we want to help make a bigger impact on this whole thing, man. And like, you know, again, it's just crazy how easy it is to lose precious lives, man. It's just it's a day. You know, I just watched like this little clip on Instagram of like these kids in a bathroom like snorting something. I didn't even know what it was, but in my head I was like, they're gonna die right there. Like this is why this is being shown, you know. So you know, I'm in fear of it, man. I'm in fear of all this.
Yeah.
And I hope that this show, guys, I hope that this episode and this show is really tuning you guys in to, you know, please like share this information. You know what I mean? Like put it out there. You know, all you got to do is hit the share button on this episode and people will get the information, some of the information that they need on how this is really affecting communities, not just, you know, the drug addicts. It's beyond drug addicts. It is people, period, man. You know, people are dying from this. They are being poisoned, you know, by these illegal mock drugs coming in, and just, you know, people are just dying by the thousands. You know, what's the number? I think it's 107,000 or something like that.
108,000. Yeah, I mean, just data that we have, and
that's not even like it's probably way more. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's just tragic. You know, it really hits me on a personal level. And I just hope that whoever's listening to this, please share this information. Parents, have a conversation with your children about it. Have a conversation with each other about this. Schools, man, what a great place to share information when you have, you know, a population of students there that are like able to listen and think about the ways you want to deliver the message to these kids to get to where they would like make a better choice, because the choice is going to be theirs no matter what. It's just like my brother said, you say don't do it, man, they're doing it. I know I was. Tell me not to do something at 16. That's like the one thing that I wanted to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, Andrea, thank you so much for your time, man, to sharing this with us today. We value your, the time that you spent with us, and we value the movement that you're a part of. And just thank you for your service to, you know, people, period. Not the recovery community, not any, all the community. You know, what you're doing is an attempt to save lives, and I think it's getting the right places. And to be the consistency that you guys are doing it with, the magnitude, the strategy that you guys are using is working. And thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, guys. Man, listen, again, fentanyl, illegal drugs, being your kids, your children are being tricked. Right. Your friends are being tricked. You know, users are being tricked. Everybody's being fooled and killed, man, by this drug that's coming in, and just by populations, by the thousands, people are just dying from this, man. You know what I mean? And I think if we all do what we can to put the information out, get the education out there, let people know, man, like, you know, man, hey, nobody's safe from this. Nobody is safe from this. And the right people need to hear it and make a move. And we need to hear it and understand it. And we need to take our action steps to be a part of the preventative measure to stop this from happening. My name is David. This is the Mo Shai Show. Thank you so much. Good night.